Hello and welcome to The Two Tones with Tony DeBolfo.
Greetings, Tone. How are you?
I'm very well myself, Tony Moclair. This is, as I said, The Two Tones, round 17, episode 17.
Episode Sam Rowe. We did sort of tap into this last week, didn't we, Tone?
Yeah.
The man closing in on the 100th game, the number 17 for Carlton, which is quite incredible when you think that Brent Croswell, a two-time Carlton Premiership player, and Gordon Collis, Brownlow medalist, both wore 17 and are not on the number 17 locker because neither played 100 games. Mark Naley, another great number 17, Tone, hit his straps in the state game, you might recall, in mid-87 for South Australia and never looked back and played an absolute blinding final series through 87 and was such a significant member of that all-conquering 87 Premiership team. Now back in South Australia and has been battling illness but fighting hard, and good luck to you, Niles, if you hear this. We want you back in fine fettle as soon as is humanly possible.
We certainly do, and we'd want some of your form around the place too. Now, we are going to review the round 16 match. Carlton travelled to, by some accounts, a very warm Brisbane, by other accounts not so, 22 degrees, Brisbane, to play against Brisbane.
Yes.
Saturday afternoon, and it was not a good match of football to watch.
Right. Yes, Tone, look, you went further north, I know. You were up at Port Douglas.
Port Douglas. I was at Paddy's Irish Pub with my daughter watching this.
Yes, and I was told by my man up north that you were just taking one barramundi at a time up there. You were probably in the best possible location last week because... you know, I was holed up down here in Melbourne, tuning into the idiot box to see, a pretty lamentable showing from the Carlton team at the Gabba. It was deplorable. I'm glad we're recording on a Thursday, Tone, not a Tuesday, because I think I might have actually upended the desk here. It was very hard to stomach. The Fremantle game was bad, so was this one.
The Melbourne game was bad, so this is in that basket of just very, very hard to watch games. Can I make the point, Tone, and I think you will agree, and a lot of people listening will agree too, there seems to be two Carlton teams that turn up on any given day. Now, we can go up against Port Adelaide. Yes, that was for Simo's 300, but it's a team in great touch, doing well, and have finals before them. And we give them, I don't want to say almighty scare, but that was a really competitive game of football where skills were on show, and it was a great game to watch as well. And then against a team, this was a dead rubber. Obviously, there was nothing at stake here. Well, there's always a win at stake, and that's what we want to see as Carlton supporters. But the other Carlton team turned up, and then the skills were sloppy, and the kicking for goal was as bad as anything you're going to see. And Carlton were put under pressure easily and just outplayed and outmuscled, and it was a very hard game to watch.
Well, commentators, experts, and the punters alike, I'm not saying aren't experts, but educated football people that follow the game, all to a man and woman said that look. They can stomach it's the team losing, but it's the manner in which you lose.
Yeah.
You know, you go down swinging, and unfortunately, no one appeared to have come for the fight last week, and I think that was what was so disappointing. You know, there were so many instances in that game where Brisbane looked as though they were partaking in a Thursday night training drill.
Yeah.
You know, there was just no pressure applied, and structures just fell away, and players looked lost.
In fairness, structures fell away, I guess, because of injuries. There were key injuries in that in that first quarter. But Carlton were competitive going into the second quarter, and that's where Brisbane basically won the game. But to have missed three easy gettable set shots at goal, which would have had Carlton 2 to 3 goals up going into the second quarter, Carlton dominated possession and inside 50s in the first quarter. I would say it was, I thought, well, hang on, we're on here.
Well, I thought exactly the same thing. I was quite impressed with the way that Carlton, worked in that first quarter. And, to my naked eye, there was nothing to suggest that form was going to dissipate. But, gee, it was probably by 10 minutes into the second, you could see where this game was heading, and you knew that it'd be all over by half time.
Yeah.
It was demoralising to watch. You know, to watch on helplessly. You know, seeing your team implode. Not good. And I know you've pointed out there are mitigating factors, I suppose, but you don't make excuses for lack of effort. And unfortunately, there was a severe lack of effort across the board from what I could see.
Well, there was something in the Herald Sun during the course of the week that had an injury ladder, a thing called an injury ladder.
Yes.
At the top of that ladder were Collingwood, and second on that ladder were Carlton. Now, you look at Collingwood's progress this year, and they've managed to, I guess, cover injuries much better than we have. They may have happened to less important players, you might argue. Nonetheless, I guess in the context of this game, those injuries did make a big difference because, as you said, structures just went to pieces. And,
yes.
And then there were holes opened up where there should have been, where there shouldn't have been. I should say, there just didn't seem to be a lot of support for Charlie Curnow. The plan seemed to be bomb it long to Charlie, and Charlie was double teamed by Brisbane defenders, which means that there, by rights, should have been a loose man spare in the forward 50 for Carlton.
Well, you would have thought, and of course, I think what made it worse, Tony, you probably didn't see the broadcast, the telecast, but to see Harry McKay sitting there in the crowd watching on as the bloke at the other end hit wood for the big rangy left-footing 6'8".
He had a great game.
Forward booting six.
Yeah.
That was pretty hard to take, but... I believe, as we speak, Tone, the news is that the Big H is going to get a call-up for the St Kilda game this week, so we will see Harry McKay out there strutting his stuff on Friday night.
All right. Well, look, that is something. People have clamoured for that, but as we've said throughout the course of the year in the podcast, Tone, it's not a given that you get a spot in the side. It has to be earned through the attitude and endeavour.
Well, that's true. And the other comment that's, I guess, come of all this is that, you know, for the most part of his time here at the club, Harry hasn't completed a full pre-season.
Mm.
So that does, you know, go against him a little bit, you know, in terms of preparation and so forth. But I think, you know, just to actually give him a taste of senior footy now, well, I mean, I think that's a good thing, you know. And, you know, with seven rounds to go in the season, where we're at, I can only see upside in giving young blokes senior games experience. And I know the coach is on record as saying you don't want to gift players games that they don't deserve.
Mm.
But we find ourselves in this situation, and it's all about the future, isn't it? We want to see as many future players of Carlton out there being given the opportunity and proving to themselves and to everyone else that they want to be here at this football club wearing the famous Carlton Guernsey. So,
well, it's certainly what we want to see. We want to see, you know, people proud of that jumper and willing to play hard while they're in it. And we didn't see, we didn't see enough of that last week, but... you know, I guess it's once you drill down on certain things. We've said injuries on the day, injuries throughout the course of the week, a younger group, many of whom don't have full solid pre-seasons behind them. And am I right? And that's something I read, Tone, but there is a percentage of that young group coming through who haven't benefited from a very good, solid pre-season that upon which they can build a season.
Well, that's true too. You know, you've got fellows like... you know, O'Brien, that he's in his first year. So, you know, he's... Any of those guys, I think, back on it now, like Dow, O'Brien... Dow didn't play the other afternoon. O'Brien, you know, to actually be out there and being asked to shoulder the load through midfield...
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tall order, isn't it, you know, kids that are still... Well, they're inexperienced. They're probably still growing and still trying to find their way. For those players, it's a real baptism of fire, isn't it? So, yes, we're all impatient. We all want to see immediate results, and you know. But you know, history tells you that young kids are going to take time. That said, we want to see as many games being put into them as humanly possible, as quickly as possible, because that is the senior team's future, isn't it?
Mm.
We want to see progress through these new players that have emerged on the scene, and Well, that's what we look out for now in these last seven games, I believe, Tone.
Well, we do. We look for further green shoots. We don't want shoots anymore. We want saplings.
You're looking for saplings.
Yeah. I'm looking for, you know, the mighty oak emerging from the acorn. And to be honest, there's one or two there. We know that.
Yes.
But as I think the game in Brisbane showed, it is all about talent and depth.
Yes.
And, you know, when you lose as many players as we have lost this year, and the players that we lost, I think it was Phillips, we lost like 10 minutes in.
Well, that's right. Simo, you know, were to clean himself on the bubble beforehand. And then you had the issue with Marchbank, yeah, which was quite bizarre. And then Wiedering, I think, came off too, you know, either, I can't remember, was it the shoulder or calf, what it was. So, you know, the team was obviously under a fair degree of duress just through lack of personnel. But that didn't excuse the lack of fight and willpower that needed to be there, regardless of the circumstance. And it unfortunately wasn't on show.
Now, Mark Murphy said during the week, we want to see a really strong team defence. We want to defend as one, and we'll be really aggressive. That's something we've trained really hard for.
Yes.
He said, also, as captain this week, I've certainly made sure that my voice is really clear about expectations out in the field and making sure that this week we train really positively. So, when Carlton have played well, it's a difficult job to get the 3-2-1s.
Yes.
The same applies, strangely enough, when Carlton have played badly.
Well, yes, and we find, Tone, that more often than not we've been in those positions all too often this year. Unfortunately, you know, there's been more bad results than good.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was extremely difficult to find three, you know, best players afield for Carlton on a really dirty day. And but in the interest of the award, we must press on. I did give one vote to Zach Fisher. Yeah. I thought Zach was tremendous, yep, just with his liveliness around the packs. Love the way he plays.
Yeah.
He's a guy, when you see him play, you do believe, oh, he really wants to give it his all.
Yes.
Love his vitality, yeah, around the contest. Two votes I gave to Ed Curno. I thought, yes, Ed was magnificent, yeah, on Zorko in shutting down a player who had given us grief,
yeah,
more often than not in previous contest, so well done, Ed.
Well, that says everything you need to know about his work rate.
Well, very true. Yeah. And three I gave to Charlie. Now, Charlie Curnow, you said, you pointed out, you know, in the absence of, Casbolt was omitted.
Yeah.
And then losing
Harry McKay. You don't have him there.
That's right. I thought Charlie was admirable in, yeah, the way that he offered a target. Perhaps the only target, as it happened. You know, as you said, he had two or three blokes hanging from every time, yeah, he went to the ball. But look, I just love the way he plays. I think what I liked about Charlie's game, Tony, what I love about Charlie's game is that he does play with the freedom. And I think in football in this day and age, a lot of players, I suspect, have to play to structures and, yeah, and play to the plan. And maybe in that respect, they're stymied in terms of being able to showcase their natural talents. Whereas Charlie, whether he's given a licence to do it or not, I don't know. But it's just fabulous to see him pit his natural strengths against the next bloke and say, I think I can beat you.
Yeah.
I think I can cover you. Bring it on. And I just love the way he plays with freedom. I make this point because there was a moment in the game also late in the contest where Lachie O'Brien kicked his first goal for the club.
Yes.
And it was a funny kick. It was off 45 and it was a half snap. It wasn't like a classic Wayne Johnson streaming down the flank on the left, slotting it through.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, it was a 45-metre kick. And I was reflecting on Lachie O'Brien's year this year, and I know that he was recruited into the club in part because of that magnificent strength of being able to kick the ball beautifully on the left on the run.
Yeah.
Well, that goal he kicked at the weekend, my memory does play tricks more often than not, but to my way of thinking, it was the first time I can actually remember seeing Lachie O'Brien kicking long.
Oh,
because every, yeah, time that he's ever had the ball in the games that I've seen, yeah, he's either drilled it as a half volley, yes, to an opponent, to a player 15 or 20 metres away, mm, or you know, skewed the kick. Whereas this one occasion, kicked the ball long and it got the maximum result for the team. And I loved seeing that. You know, now, I maybe there are factors as to why he hasn't kicked long early in the season, but the fact that he did in this particular moment and got the maximum return says to me, well, let's encourage this and let's let the players play to their strengths. Now, as I say, I'm only surmising. I'm not the coach of the club. I'm only saying what I see. And as I say, that goal, it's the first time I can remember seeing Lachie O'Brien actually kicking long. And it was great to see him do that and get the maximum return for it.
Well, see, that's what we want to see more of, and that is why he's an exciting player and definitely one to keep your eye on.
Very true.
You know, between him and Paddy Dow, I like what I see there a lot. And I'm sure a lot of other Carlton supporters do. There are others that we can mention, but we won't, because we've got your votes now.
For they're locked 3-2-1. In. They are locked in, Tony.
And we'll be announcing that, of course, at the end of the run of the two tones, which will happen after... Just let me see. It's not mathematically possible that we'll play the final, so I think after round 22, that might be our last podcast. So, now... just quickly before we're going to preview the St Kilda game, which is at Etihad Stadium, Friday night, 7:50 p.m. It's a St Kilda home game.
It is.
It's already attracted a rather disparaging moniker, Tone.
Well, they're calling it the Mockbuster, Tone. I will have nothing of it. In fact, I'm looking forward to seeing our team come back hard after that, you know, deplorable performance in Brisbane. And from what I can gather, there's going to be a couple of players, being recalled to the team, which is great. I think we can sort of home in on those now, Tone.
Yes, please. Now, I've got a list. Lucy, our producer, hands us a list with a whole bunch of information on it. And this is what I've got in front of me. Injury update. Now, Tone, are these names, therefore, available for selection for the St Kilda game? Am I reading that right? Because... if this is true, we're going to see a debut, are we not, of two players, potentially?
Well, we're going to see, quite so. Matt Shaw making his debut for the Carlton Football Club.
Yeah.
We're also going to see Harry, by popular demand, get a call up.
Yep.
And we're also going to see Caleb Marchbank take his place, having suffered that horrible scare of the, and... I don't know exactly what it was, but there's a heart irregularity. Came off the ground last week under some duress. Spent the night in hospital in Brisbane. Well, he's been cleared of any residual long-term damage. He's taking his place. And Simo, who withdrew, is also ready to go. So the one casualty at this stage, my understanding is Jakob Wietering is out of the team. Matt Shaw making his senior debut for the Carlton Football Club.
That is very exciting news. Now, can I throw some names at you, just, I guess, longer-term injury lists?
Yes.
And players that may be making their debut. It's possibly before the end of the year, who knows? Kim LeBois.
Kim LeBois, or LeBois, I prefer your...
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you. Yep. And they're in the World Cup final, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You want France or the Croatians, Tone?
Hang on, Croatia, they played...
Knocked Diglin over.
Did they?
They did.
I didn't know that.
Didn't you hear that?
Oh, I didn't hear 2-1 that.
2-1 in extra time.
Oh, that's right. I wanted England to win. Jesus, it's like arsenic or strychnine, isn't it? France or
Croatia. Well, you go for David over Goliath, wouldn't you? You have to say Croatian. Oh, not
possibly. I know. Well, there's, Moclair is originally a French name, so I guess there's some part of me.
Oh.
Who makes the better food? I think the French do, so let's go with that.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
There we go.
Where's your beret? I would like to see Croatia get up. I'll pitch for the underdog, the stories are coming out this week, Tony, in the aftermath of that semi against England, that Croatia makes the final. I think with the smallest population.
4.1 million or something.
Since Uruguay in the 50s, I think. It's an incredible feat, isn't it, when you
really
think about
is.
It? You know, and good luck to them.
Yeah.
But let's hope for a good game, Tone.
So Kim LeBois.
Yeah, Kim LeBois. So Kim LeBois is a South Australian. Oh, he's battled, injury informed for most of the year. A will-o'-the-wisp forward, which is probably what we need. So I'm presuming that he's going to resume through the twos if he's fit. Angus Schumacher is another one.
Yep.
Now, he had been battling a slight groin strain for the best part of a fortnight. But, Tone, you'll appreciate this with Angus Schumacher. When I came into the club this week, I was thinking about which player I wanted to interview.
To
gain some sort of positivity out of the negativity of the weekend, and the closest I could get was Angus Schumacher, who's, you know, we look at the last seven games, we think, well, you know, what is there to play for? Well, there's one kid that is really driving to try and get a senior call up.
Yeah.
You know, he's been working towards his senior debut, and what's lovely about this story, I've spoken to Angus for the website. He was a Carlton supporter as a child. And
excellent.
I fondly remember, Tone, the night this year after Angus Schumacher's name was called by Carlton with a trade it had earned in the Bryce Gibbs deal, where I had to ring Angus at his home in Bendigo, South Bendigo, and I can still remember his reaction, having been a lifelong supporter, and him saying, oh, this is a dream. This is the greatest day of my life. And I remember hanging up the phone and thinking, he's a boy that really wants to play for Carlton.
Yes.
And when I spoke to him this week, I said, have you often dreamt about singing the song?
Yeah.
And he said all the time about what it would mean to be in the circle with 21 of my mates singing the song after a senior game. So to hear a player like that, he said that as a kid he used to come down intermittently to see Carlton play at the MCG.
Yeah.
He said he can remember kicking eight against Essendon at the paddock that grew, and he can also remember Judd strutting his stuff. And he said, I had a mounted photograph of Chris Judd on my bedroom wall, and he said, it's still there.
Oh, it's still good there. Work.
So, you know, that's a really good positive, Angus Schumacher. Great story. I hope he gets there. So he's resuming through the Northern Blues this week, Tony, but he's really trying to, you know, impose himself on those contests to get a call up to senior football, hopefully before year's end.
What sort of player is he?
Left footer, nice left foot kick, hard-headed player. Has been playing off half-back, although came down from the bush as a midfielder.
Yeah.
So nice straight-ahead player, gives his all the contest, and just the sort of player Carlton needs right now.
Well, I'm into that. I'm in indeed. Well, now, Tone, as we said, Mattrall making his club debut against St Kilda. Simo back in. Wiedering, as you said, is out. Round 17, St Kilda versus Etihad. You would have to say, back on Etihad, back on a ground that's not going to... I mean, the players were sweating. It looked like difficult conditions in which to play football.
Yes.
And it was just as difficult for me in the bar at Port Douglas. ordering that pint.
Yeah,
it was not easy.
My spies at the saloon bar told me that you were under an enormous amount of duress knocking down that Darwin stubby.
Yeah, it was very tough. And you know, the deep fried cheese balls, they were a struggle, but I got there in the end. Don't worry about that.
You're a trooper.
Thank you very much. So we'll be watching in more, let's say, moderate or probably slightly cooler.
Yes. I believe, as you say, you're quite right. The humidity levels were up. Again, we're not making excuses, Tony, for that performance.
But all these things can be factored in.
They can be.
You know, I'm a big fan of the old saying, Tone, that success has 1,000 fathers, but failure is an orphan. But let's just flip that and say that there may have been 1,000 factors at play. Now, I think we're right to believe that it's going to be a good game.
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, St Kilda are, down the track a little bit too. So, the players are playing for pride, aren't they now? I mean, really, you know, all members and supporters of Carlton want is a little bit of fight in the dog. You know, that's what we want to see. And I'm sure St Kilda players, you know, want to round out the season as best they can also. You know, Carlton have been under the pump all week. You know, they've been vilified in the press and probably fairly too, you know. So we want to see a genuine response, you know. We want to see the Carlton team come back in the best possible way. You know, they really, really have to turn things around quickly to get it going again. And we just want to see effort. We want to see effort.
We really do. Some of those articles this week made for very hard reading, it must be said. There was a lot of unvarnished truth in them.
Yes.
Nonetheless, you do realise that a game like the Brisbane game just gives a lot of people an excuse to publish stuff like that. Mm. And so we want to silence the doubters. And the best way to do that is with 4 points and the theme song of the greatest football club in the world being played at the end of the game on Friday night at Etihad Stadium.
That's what we would love to hear, Tone. Can I just say before we close that earlier today the great man Anthony Koutafidis popped into the club for an interview, a little interview to camera.
Yeah. Was that with you, Tone?
Yes, and in the Garden Stand.
CarltonFC.com.au.
Yes, little peer, Tone. Just in the lead into the club's multicultural round next week, I know it was great to hear Kuta talk about... actually playing not only for the Carlton Football Club but for his mother and father, whom had made their own respective odysseys from, you know, different parts of the world to Australia.
One Greek, one Italian,
correct. And it was very interesting to hear him talk about how he dedicated so much of his football to them because he appreciated, understood the sacrifices they made to come to Australia.
Yeah.
And how he and Ange Christou both looked up to Mil Hanna because they knew Mil himself had
been through that.
Had been
kind
through
of
the same.
Yeah, well, Mil, as you've spoken to Mil, and Mil has a fascinating
absolutely
backstory.
Fascinating story. Leaving Lebanon as a 7 or 8 year old and settling, you know, just up the road in Brunswick. How lucky was Carlton when you think about it? You know that and with Kuta too. That, you know, Kuta just happened to be in the right place, right time when Carlton came calling. And so it was lovely to speak to Kuta about those memories that he had. And he made the point, he said, I wore 43 because my mother was born in 43.
Yeah.
In tribute to her. And he said there was a backhanded tribute to my father from Ange because Ange wore 39, not realising that my dad was born in 39. So it was a nice story. And the other story that he shared in respect of Mil was that before the 95 grand final, he said, one of the memories, great memories I have is in the rooms before the game, Mil calling both Ange and myself into our own little huddle. Come on, fellas, we've got to do this. We've been through a lot together. Let's go the distance. So... it was a nice opportunity to speak to Koutafidis in that situation, and I'm sure there'll be a little bit there for supporters to draw on in the next few days leading up to the multicultural game with Hawthorn.
Well, there's been a lot of great players at Carlton. We know that, and the name Koutafidis is comfortably rubbing broad shoulders with them because he was an absolute superstar and was there. Kuta's one of those players who you'd be half out of your seat as he approached the ball because you knew something amazing was about to happen.
Well, that's true. And you know what? I say the same thing with Charlie Curnow.
Yeah.
I think he's that sort of player. They've got that je ne sais quoi while we're on that French theme. Something about them that just... Yes, it sets them aside. Players that can do things that other players can't.
Yeah.
And that's what's exciting. And, you know, talking to Kuta about Charlie Curnow, we both agreed, isn't it great to see someone like Charlie just being allowed to play with flair?
Because let's have more of that.
Let's have more of it. We need it, Tone.
Yeah, amen. Throw the rule book out the window and we hope on its way out it hits the entire St Kilda Football Club, knocks them all over, and we get away with the 4 points on... Friday night, we'll see you there. This has been the Two Tones. We appreciate everybody who listens to the podcast week in and week out. It's brought to you by Tony DeBolfo, myself, Tony Moclair, and produced by Lucy Jamison. Yes, sister of, if you don't mind. How is Jemmo, by the way?
Yeah, he's well.
Doing well? The shoulders okay?
Yeah, it's
good. Okay. Hello, Jemmo, if you're listening. I'm sure he does. And we will catch you next week.